You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been covering the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and hosting this podcast for 101 episodes and counting. It is now March the 18th, 2024. I have to apologize once again for the rough condition of my voice. My immune system is definitely not in midseason form yet. Opening day for the Orioles is now just 10 days away, and 1 week from today, the spring training schedule will already be over by this time. The Orioles will then have to make up their minds about who to put on the roster for the start of the regular season. I think there are going to be a number of difficult decisions that are going to need to be made at that time. That's what we're going to talk about in today's episodes, focusing specifically on choices that I think will have to be coming involving the bullpen and the bench. To start us out with a rough sketch, manager Brandon Hyde told reporters after Sunday's split squad games that the Orioles are not considering starting the season with a short bullpen, which would have meant 14 position players and 12 pitchers. Theoretically, that could have worked for a time at the beginning of the season due to early off days on the calendar, not requiring the full five-man rotation for a little while. But the Orioles didn't want to do that. I think that's perfectly sound. So the team is going to go as expected with the standard 13 position players, 13 pitchers. So for every game, assuming everyone is healthy, that means a four-man bench available and an eight-man bullpen that's there on top of a five-man starting rotation. There's a total of 9 Orioles players who are on the current 40-man roster who are out of minor league options, which I think is also an important aspect to consider in who's going to make the team. So these 9 guys, that means they've got to either make the team, or if they're going to be sent to the minors, they would be placed on waivers before they can be sent to the minors. And at that point, they could potentially be claimed by any other team that then would just want just have to pay their salary for this year. And none of the players are in line for a large salary, so it wouldn't be a huge expense for any team. So they'd be lost to the Orioles, no longer among the depth options, such as they would be if they ended up getting outrighted, as it's called, by passing through waivers and just getting sent to Norfolk. The out-of-options list of players is as follows. Pitchers, Mike Bauman, Cole Irvin, C.N.L. Perez, and Jacob Webb. Outfielder, Ryan McKenna. Infielders, Jorge Mateo, Nick Maton, Tyler Nevin, and Ramon Urias. It's a long list. If I've counted them right on the website MLB Trade Rumors, the Orioles have the most out-of-options players out of any team. Most teams, in fact, have 4 or fewer guys in this category. So really, This is a unique crunch that the Orioles find themselves in here among teams in the league this year. So having rattled off that list, honestly, there's really only two names out of the nine who, in my opinion, have no business making the team unless there's multiple disasters between now and opening day. So Nick Maton and Tyler Nevin, sorry, but it's not 2021 anymore. I don't think the Orioles need guys like you right now. So the other seven, all the rest of them, everyone in that remaining seven at least has some kind of case to be made, if not a very good case, based on past big league success, or at least non-failure. Although there are flaws out there, or not even flaws with the individual players, but maybe just more exciting options among the prospects that are going to push some of these guys maybe closer to the fringe than they might have been if not for the existence of those prospects. So for me, I think fitting all seven of the remaining guys on the roster, I think that might be a tough task to accomplish, even without considering when non-roster candidates who might crash the party, like Jackson Holliday, who seems like he's on the way to being the Orioles' opening day second baseman. So the three out-of-options relievers, Mike Bauman, Cionel Pérez, and Jacob Webb. You know, Pérez and Webb, they've already proven they are volatile within a given season. Pérez really stunk at the beginning of last season. Webb, well, he unfortunately for us was pretty bad in the postseason. Bauman already got left off the postseason roster last October. So the other thing is, with how much of a premium the Orioles seem to place on being able to regularly shuffle the last one or even two slots in their bullpen with fresh pitchers from Norfolk, they're not going to be able to do that to the same degree if all three of these out-of-options guys end up making the team, because they cannot be freely optioned. Orioles.com beat writer Jake Rill posted a projected roster on Sunday afternoon. He did manage to squeeze all three of those guys into an eight-man bullpen. His projected bullpen was with Craig Kimbrell as the closer and the remainder of the bullpen as Keegan Aiken, Bauman, Yennier Cano, Danny Colom, Pérez, Dylan Tate, and Webb. With Rill's projection noting that he assumed Aiken would make the team instead of having a more traditional long reliever type guy on the roster, which might otherwise be Bruce Zimmerman or Julio Teheran. So left out of this picture, at least in Rill's estimation, are Brian Baker and Nick Vespi, who might be able to shuffle through on the Norfolk-Baltimore shuttle, with Aiken, Cano, and Tate being the guys in the bullpen who have options and can be sent to the minors. I don't know how long that would prove to be a sustainable mix, though, because at least as far as we hope, Cano and Tate are going to be pitching well enough in key roles that they shouldn't be on the Norfolk-Baltimore shuttle at all. So really, if it's only Aiken, I don't know. I don't know if they could manage it. And, you know, if guys like Bauman, Pérez, or Webb come out of the gate stinking, like Pérez did last year, I don't know that the Orioles are going to be able to be patient with them for long. I will be right back after a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor, and then I'll talk about what might happen with the crunch involving the position players on the bench, and specifically the outfield.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, so yeah, the bench, they're going to feel the crunch too. With all of Mateo, McKenna, and Arias in the out-of-options group, I think they're also in the group where they've got to make it on the team, or they have to be placed on waivers, or the Orioles need to trade them for some kind of return to not lose them for nothing on waivers. Because, like, as Colton Cowser, Heston Kerstad, and Kyle Stowers are all making impressions with their spring performance, I think that could be what squeezes McKenna out from his years-long fourth outfield role on the team. What's more, the team has been experimenting with Mateo in the outfield, so if he's in the mix as a super utility guy, and maybe the Orioles don't need their fourth outfielder to be capable of playing center field, that's even more that might push McKenna out of the way. Real's roster projections suggested this final outfield spot would go to Couser, but he said that any one of these four guys could be the one to end up claiming it. If you had asked me before spring training if I thought Stowers had any chance of making the team, I would have said no. Now, admittedly, it's a running joke on Camden Chat, and even just within my household, because my wife makes fun of me for it, that I secretly don't like Stowers, because one time I was writing a recap on Camden Chat after Stowers had a good game, I forgot to put Stowers as an option on the traditional Camden Chat Most Birdland Player poll. It was late, I think. I was frazzled by the time I got done writing the recap. I had to put in a poll. I just didn't think about Stowers. I left him off. So, whoops, but people have made fun of me for that ever since. But I don't have anything against Stowers other than that he just hasn't done enough at the big league level to make me think he's going to be as good as his prospect stock was, which admittedly also was not overwhelmingly amazing. It's not like he ever had hype on the level of some of the guys that the Orioles have had make top 100 prospect lists, and indeed, Stowers never made any of the top 100s on any of the mainstream lists because there were always questions about whether he would strike out too much, which pretty much he has done everywhere that he has gone in the minors. And, you know, the big league stuff we have seen from Stowers to date, certainly it hasn't been impressive. 2 years ago, he was acceptable over a 24-game sample, but then last year, he went just 2-for-30 over a 33 plate appearance sample. So that dragged his career totals down. I thought before this spring it might have dragged Stowers out of the Orioles roster picture entirely. I've said this before about Stowers. I'll just say it again. I feel like the biggest problem for him is that the trio of Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins, and Anthony Santander became a good outfield in time for the Orioles to become a good team. If the Orioles had not started their ascent in about June of 2022, we might have seen any one of those guys dealt, especially, I think, Hayes after a good first half of that 2022 season. And, you know, by the time that rolled around, the Orioles were not in a position where they wanted to start. By the time the trade deadline in 2022, I should say, rolled around, they weren't in a position where they wanted to start dealing away position players with multiple years of control, which turned out to be a good decision because the Orioles were pretty darn good in 2023. And they needed contributions from all three of those guys. But, you know, that was the easiest path for Stowers to come in, is if Hayes or somebody got traded because the Orioles weren't great in 2022. And then it would have been Stowers' chance. But nope. So anyway, as you probably know, Stowers hit three home runs in a spring training game yesterday. I saw one of the stat people on Twitter. I don't remember exactly which one. Sorry. They said it was the first time that a player has hit three home runs in a spring game in 6 years. So all of the caveats, of course, applied about how spring training results don't particularly matter. Still, even among results that don't matter, that is a remarkable and uncommon accomplishment. Stowers, he's really been blasting through left-handed pitching across the Grapefruit League schedule. That was his most glaring weakness up to this point. As a lefty batter, he had a strong negative as a platoon split against left-handed pitchers. I think he probably has nothing left to gain playing more at the AAA level. Possibly neither do Couser or Kerstad, but Stowers is 26 years old, so he really, really doesn't have much left to gain at AAA. If he's not going to make the Orioles, they're really going to have to consider trading him to get some value out of him. I think the easiest hypothetical trade to make would be if some team with a weak outfield wanted to send like a relief prospect who has to be put on the 40-man roster after this season for Stowers. Maybe even if you wanted to get crazy, somebody who has like 1.5 seasons of big league experience under their belt at roughly, let's say, Brian Baker level of performance, or maybe slightly better. If you really wanted to get crazy, but that requires some team that has a weak outfield to like Stowers enough to make a trade like that. I mean, if I was the Cleveland Guardians, whose outfielders literally combined for a total of 18 home runs across all three outfield spots last season, which is insane, I would want to try out Stowers. But maybe they see the same flaws that the Orioles have seen, or presumably have seen in Stowers up to now, because I think it's notable for how the Orioles treat their prospects in which ones end up in the promoted and stay up for good category versus who is in the promoted and then sent back down category. And to illustrate this, think about the difference between how Joey Ortiz was treated last season and how Jordan Westberg was treated. Ortiz had three separate stints with the team without ever playing much. He was assigned a high uniform number, 65. Westberg, on the other hand, arrived on the roster in late June, and he stayed on the team the rest of the way, regular playing time on through the postseason. And by the way, they gave him number 11. So I think those things might have been small early signs that Westberg was a young player the Orioles would want to try to keep for their own long-term purposes, while Ortiz would be the one they would try to use as trade bait, as they ultimately did when they traded him along with DL Hall to get Corbin Burns onto the team. I think Stowers certainly is more in that Ortiz category. Going back to when Stowers was called up for his own big league debut, when the Orioles were traveling to Toronto in 2022, Stowers was a replacement because Anthony Santander at that point had not been vaccinated for COVID, and the country of Canada literally would not let him in because they were not allowing unvaccinated athletes into the country at that time. So it was a four-game series. The Orioles didn't even have Stowers play in every game there. And that was before, you know, we knew the Orioles were on the upswing. And so it didn't really matter as far as we knew at that time. But they still didn't want to just get Stowers four big league games and send him back to Norfolk with stuff to learn or whatever. I do think the Orioles should be cautious enough to be open to the possibility that Stowers maybe did unlock something new this offseason that he hadn't shown before. One early instance from when Mike Elias was an assistant in Houston involved the Astros giving up on J.D. Martinez at the end of spring training in 2014, ultimately choosing to release him, not noticing that he was looking better than he had done in previous years. Martinez kind of famously went on to sign with the Tigers, and over the years since then has hit 91 home runs, with a 908 OPS, starting with the 2014 season on to now. Of course, he's unsigned heading into 2024, but that's a pretty solid decade of baseball there. Martinez, he was heading into his age 26 season, just as Stowers now is. I'm not saying it's likely that Stowers is right now on the start of a Martinez-like ascent, but it would be pretty foolish for the Orioles to give up on Stowers when they don't have to give up on him and then have him end up turning into something. And you know, all of these words are just about Kyle Stowers, right? We haven't even gotten into Kowser and Kerstad, the actual prospects who I think most fans were excited about 2 months ago, who have also had pretty darn interesting springs. Kerstad, of course, had a solid month of big league results after getting called up late last season. He was the one they carried on to the postseason roster. Kowser doesn't have much in the way of MLB results to show for himself yet, but he did OPS 937 for Norfolk last season. Does still have a number of fans among the prospect list compiling group. So, I don't know. I mean, what are they going to do? I just don't know. Unless there's a surprise injury that none of us wants to see over this final week of spring games, there are really going to be some tough choices to be made with the Orioles roster. And on top of that, we should all not forget that it won't be a surprise if there is a move that is made over the next week or so, or really over the next 10 days, that changes the picture, because Elias has done that really for three springs running. Going back to 3 years ago, much less consequentially, days before the season started, the Orioles brought in Adam Plutko from Cleveland. 2 years ago, the Orioles, days before the season began, traded Cole Sulcer and Tanner Scott, which was surprising at the time, but that ended up working out since it created space for Felix Bautista to blossom. 1 year ago, the Orioles brought in Danny Colom from the Twins just 3 days before opening day. So if someone out there becomes available who the Orioles like more than their existing options, I think Elias will pounce, or if some team offers a return that Elias likes for pieces he might consider surplus, then he might pounce on that too. I think that Stowers might be a candidate for a move like that. Maybe Urias, maybe even Mateo. I don't know. Because even Ryan McKenna, you know, because with Kowser, Kerstad, and Stowers all there, how do you keep McKenna around, right? I don't think that the Orioles should or will lose any sleep about whether or not some other team ends up claiming McKenna on waivers if he ends up being placed there. But I don't know, man. I don't know. We'll see what the last week of spring training ends up being. If you would like to suggest a question or a topic for a future episode, you can email CamdenCastPod@gmail.com to get into the mailbag. That's all that I've got for today. Sorry, it's a little shorter than usual. I'm not feeling great, and I didn't want to push on too much farther. If you enjoyed this episode and have not already subscribed, please do subscribe to the show on your favorite podcasting platform. I will be back in a week to get us set up for the start of the regular season. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. This is Mark Brown, signing off.